Well, good morning and welcome to Conversations. My name is Ed Holohan and my guest this morning is Dodie Whittaker. Good morning, Dodie.
Good morning, Ed.
How are you?
I'm excellent.
Are you pretending it's not early in the morning?
Are we supposed to? We're not allowed to actually say what time it is because that would be offensive.
Because it would be betraying some things, yes. But we're pretending it's Thursday morning and because that's when this airs.
Yeah.
And thanks.
Did you call it breaking the fourth wall in radio?
I wish we did. What, Dodie, where precisely is the fourth wall? That's in the second turn at Indianapolis, isn't it? No, that's no.
Okay, well, we're going to tear it down.
We're going to tear it. We're going to blast right through it because that's what we do here at Community Radio. This show is called Conversations, as you know, and thank you so much for tuning in. Without you, there is no us, so I appreciate this.
Thank you.
I've known Dodie for a pretty long time. It could have been.
Okay.
I was looking at the audience. Now, you may have...
You were looking at that fourth wall, which if we tore it down, it would make more sense.
Then I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Let's start.
Okay.
I mean, there's going to be a lot about music, and it's going to be a lot about singing, and it's going to be a lot about how you grew up. Oh, you know what? The first thing I really want to know, first thing really, really for sure, is How did you get the name Dodie?
Ooh, that's an excellent question.
Yeah, well, I've always wondered, and I've never asked you.
So have I. No. So the story is, first of all, my given name is Dorothy.
Dorothy. Okay, cool.
Dorothy. Named after my grandmother, Dorothy Morris, who passed away way too young.
Mm.
Shortly after my parents were married in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I was born several years later, and in tribute, I was named Dorothy. But the story goes that my mother kind of took a look at this little baby and said, well, that's not a baby name.
Dorothy. It's a pretty grown-up
name. It is a grown-up name. Not to mention old-fashioned, although she might not have had that thought in 1968. I do not know. Maybe it's coming back. But, yeah, so she was, thinking, like, I need another name for this kid. And she heard, this is a story, that she heard some nurses or some people talking in a hallway, and somebody said something that sounded like Dodie in their chatter. And she was like, oh.
There it is.
There you go. And so I've been called Dodie since I was a baby. Although my dad was,
bless
wanted,
his heart.
Oh my goodness, my sweet,
there's,
sweet dad.
There's a missing. Yeah. Yes. What was his take on this?
He tried to kind of bring the Dorothy back and in.
Attaboy.
For like... I mean, I have proof because he would write me these letters.
Oh, really?
Letters. We could maybe talk about what those are.
Remember in those? I'm making a note to myself with an actual pen.
Write a letter.
Yeah. Boy, I used to write a lot.
Yeah. So my parents divorced when I was young, so I have this trove of letters. And he would address them to Dorothy.
Your parents divorced when you were young?
Yes.
There's so much about you I don't know. Okay, so of course you were getting letters because...
I was getting letters all the time. I could go back and look, but I mean, for years, he would address them to Dorothy, and Rachel was my sister's
name. That's a very dad thing to do.
It is a very dad thing to do, and I can bookend that with a very, what I find a hilarious story, which there are many. We could spend this entire time pretty much the whole rest of my life talking about what an honor and also an experience it was taking care of my dad once he fell ill with Alzheimer's.
Yep.
But among many, many other things, including that he pretty much thought I was a cousin, towards the, the last year and a half, which was fine.
No, let me stop you there.
Yes.
Were you his cousin Dorothy, or were you cousin Dodie?
I was, so the thing was, he knew that my name was Dodie, and he would tell people that I chose the name Dodie because I didn't like the name Dorothy.
Interesting.
That was the story in his mind.
Interesting.
Many years in the future. Was that it was really just me being willful and not wanting to be associated. But I mean, it was like, well,
another,
you know,
dad
she,
take on things.
Yes. And I was like, but you know, blame mom. That's, come on.
Hey, I'm still with you, buddy. Blame mom.
Yeah.
Come on.
She's also still with us.
You know how
but
I meant,
yes.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, you're right. No. Right, exactly. I stayed.
See, but this, let me keep harping on this for a minute. Because if he, you know, if he wanted to call you Dorothy.
Yes.
But much, much later, he was calling you
Dodie,
and not Dorothy, then he certainly couldn't have chosen. I'm just coming back to it is your fault.
Oh, that. Right. Well, it's always,
let's get that established.
So no, Dodie. That was, so he rewrote the story to suit his own needs.
Funny how we do that.
But I do feel honored having been named after her. And so technically my name now is Dorothy Morris Whitaker, which Morris was my maiden name.
It's quite dignified.
In the middle there, it used to be Dorothy Rebecca Morris. So Rebecca was my given middle name, which is a lovely name, but I never really was that attached to it.
Were you given
I switched
Dorothy
when I got
Rebecca
married.
At birth or confirmation or just at birth?
Confirmation.
Well, there's a whole
God forbid.
A whole another show.
Okay, I was going to say... You know that I'm Jewish, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. No, in fact, my dad was a Methodist minister.
Right.
Many people know. I was dedicated into the Unitarian Church, as far as I know. Later. I know that I was not baptized.
They do things later.
I know I was not baptized because I have spontaneously combusted many times when I've had to take communion at church jobs.
Did everyone else get through it okay?
Or is
it purely personal?
No, it was internal.
Did you ever take a whole congregation with you?
Fortunately, I did. I have not yet.
Well, we're young.
Not yet.
You know.
There's plenty of baptismal fonts and altars
Ooh,
and things.
There sure
you
are.
Know, yeah.
And you've sung in many of those sanctuaries.
I have sung in many. Yeah. In fact, the first time I really remember setting foot in a Catholic church was in my mid-20s when I got a job singing at this wonderful place called St. Peter's in the Loop.
Oh, sure.
In downtown
That's
Chicago.
A big deal in Chicago.
In the, carved into the side of an office
building. It is. It's like a cave dwelling.
It's a crazy place.
It is a crazy place.
And it was actually kind of it was literally like a, baptismal by fire.
So
I would say. Because I got this job. And I got this job because I had an audition with another organization, and I met this incredible woman named Kirsten, and she was just getting ready to go off to graduate school. This is actually a really fun story. So this woman, young woman, a little bit younger than me, and she was vacating three choral jobs.
Really?
And I met her. We sang together for a few
months.
She
was going off to school?
She was going off to school.
Got
and
it.
So I literally we were like similar voices.
Uh-huh.
She was incredibly quick, you know, and reading and all the things. And I took on that mantle a little bit reluctantly, but it all worked out. Of like a leader, you know.
Okay.
But she was that person, super sweet, petite. Like, literally, I could fit into the choir robe that she vacated back then.
So
you're trying to picture that?
I'm not.
You're trying to imagine.
Nothing to say. Nothing to say.
I was 25.
So this is, you talk about a fit. I mean, everything.
It was absolutely, Kirsten Hedegaard is her name. She's she's my
Hildegard?
Hero. Hedegaard.
Hedegaard.
She's an incredible musician, conductor. She's done well for
herself.
She's
still working out there?
She is.
Good.
Yes. She and her husband, Andy. And they're awesome. I could just, do you want to just plug my friends, Kirsten and Andy? And I don't have to talk about myself or anything that's happening here. I'm not completely following their careers, but no, they're amazing. At the time, Andy was her fiance, and he was left behind. And so we all kind of took care of him and made sure he wasn't getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And sweetest guy in the world, ended up conducting one of the choirs that I ended up singing in.
Oh.
It was called His Majesty's Clarks.
I remember them well. And we used to see them at Millard. Was that the chapel in up at Northwestern University?
That sounds right. Yeah. Okay.
It's it. Yeah.
Well, I don't have to tell you. I mean, no, there might be a few other people listening.
Because
I'm not sure.
We're on the radio. That's why you have to tell me.
But okay, so ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Ed and I clearly, I mean, these are a little bit obscure references, I will say.
Nothing in Chicago is obscure.
Okay, well.
Well, that's not true.
No, it's, come on.
St. Peter in the Loop was Saint pretty.
The Franciscan Friars, who I went to
now,
Israel
I'm
with.
I'm a big fan of.
Yes.
I am.
The Franciscans?
Yes.
Yeah. They're great. Yeah.
If you had to pick, I'm not going to say a lot more about the other side, about the shock troops and the Inquisition.
No.
I'm talking about that
was kind of my introduction to a Catholic, church.
You could do worse.
I could do worse. What I remember. So there's a really lovely balcony, and normally we would sing from the balcony.
Where are we now?
In St. Peter's in the Loop. But for some reason, the service, I mean, they were like, she said, call this guy, J. Michael Thompson, who's also very kind of, people know who he is in our circle. and I swear it was probably like a Thursday, and he was like 10 o'clock Sunday show up, kind of a thing. Or no, actually, it might have been one of those. There were services every day at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. It probably was like a Tuesday or something. So, because that's how they had the little choir would come down and do that. And so we were up at the what do you call that?
What do you call that?
An altar.
We call that an altar. Just like Jewish people used to.
The Bema. We were, did go to church growing up, but Unitarians are, we're not going to go there.
No,
but
we're not.
So I literally show up. They're like, okay, there's a closet over there. Get a choir robe. Got the choir robe, said Kirsten. And they handed me a binder of music and like filed us down onto the altar. And
no kidding.
Yeah, no rehearsal, nothing. I mean,
bam.
And again, that's my skill set. So why meeting Kirsten was so perfect, because it was like, oh, I can actually do
You're one of
that.
Those people who can walk on, read it, sing it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm doing that right now, actually.
What key is this
what
in?
Key
I never get that
in.
Part right.
The key of life.
The key of...
Yeah. So anyway, but I do distinctly remember, the singing part was fine. Reading whatever, the Latin and all that. But at one point, everybody kind of turned and, bowed their heads or something.
Oh. And let me guess what Dodie was doing. Yeah. She was looking heavenward.
I did it, but I didn't expect it. I didn't know. I'm like, you're facing one direction, and all of a sudden you're facing in another direction.
Yeah, we had a lot of that stuff, especially in the old days. We had a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. So,
how's your kneeling? Are you any good at kneeling, Dodie?
Not great. I don't remember if I actually took communion at that point. I have to say I have many, many ways of getting out of taking communion.
There are myriad ways.
Only because I am. I'm like, I'm not baptized, y'all. Like, something might have. Somebody's gonna get in trouble. But previous to that, I actually sang at a Greek Orthodox church.
Oh, really?
In Boston. For
are you
two
listening,
years.
Philothea? Are you listening?
Oh, we've talked. In fact, long ago I was supposed to somehow connect up with her church. Uh-huh. It hasn't happened, but doesn't mean it's not gonna happen. It will happen. That was actually a really cool story. I met the priest down there.
He's
so cool.
Yeah.
I met him at my dad's audiologist. But anyway, Dr. Transo, who's amazing in Boscobel. Please, everybody who's listening, if you are able.
If you can hear us, go to Dr.
Transo.
Sorry, I'm sorry. That's like a Mel Brooks
it's
joke.
Really
that was
that's really.
But that's why he's funny.
Okay. And that's why you do this at, 9 of whatever in the morning.
Thereabouts.
Okay. So anyway, yes, I sang at this church in South Boston, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
They used to pick me up and drive me down there. And I did have to take communion, but the communion was this like really delicious kind of spongy bread.
Mm-hmm.
Like they went all out, you know, it was actual, like it wasn't like some crazy little wafers.
What kind of church was this?
Greek Orthodox.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I got to change. Well, I should have changed.
Well, yeah.
You know,
it's never
I mean.
Too late.
No, it's sometimes it's too late.
You
but
know what?
Again, you know how many times we're going to say, that's a whole other show?
That's a whole other show.
We're going to say that a lot
Are we
this
gonna
morning.
Get to
so
this?
You get used to it. We might get to these
All
questions.
Right.
If we do, great. If we don't, you know, it's their loss.
Yes.
As long as we're...
It is their... We're having fun. I always say that.
Fun.
I always say that. Like, you know, even if the audience... I mean, you know, I perform for a living, or I used to. But, like, it doesn't really matter, y'all. Like, it doesn't matter. We're having fun up here.
Yeah.
I don't care what is happening in the audience.
That
is absolutely a lie.
Let me add
absolutely
to that.
A lie.
Yeah,
it'd be
but it's
hard.
Fun to say.
It is, and you can justify it. Like, if there's more people up on stage than there are in the audience, let's say that.
Well, that's
I'm sure the audience is enjoying themselves, but there is there's some you know discussion that needs to be had.
Turn the lights way up so I can't see how many people are out there.
But no,
Glenn Gould.
Clearly we can't do this without you.
Here's a Glenn Gould story.
Okay.
Eccentric at best. He was a very odd fellow. Saltines, ketchup, and scrambled eggs.
God.
That's what he ate. Oh, and Archway cookies. That was it. That was it.
Doesn't make me feel good.
No. He did die young.
Oh, boy.
But when asked by himself, because he used to interview himself on the radio, fascinating guy,
that is
what the relationship
may be coming
of,
for
of,
both of us. I feel like we could do that.
We may achieve it on this show.
We may.
The question was, what is your relationship? What is the performer's relationship to the audience?
Mm-hmm.
He says... In my experience, a lot of performers feel a one to one relationship, performer to audience, audience to performer, one to one. I feel a one me to zero relationship with the audience, and it's like it's stunning. And he's being completely. I don't care if you're there.
I mean, he,
which
he,
is actually he went totally to recording.
Yeah.
You know, he stopped playing live. I guess that made sense. But when
what drove him as an artist?
You know what? I wonder.
Interesting.
Technical profession.
You know,
some
of us tend to maybe be a little bit on a spectrum. We'll just say that.
So true.
Some, a few
so true.
Artists, maybe.
Yeah, you know, you could name a couple, yeah.
Maybe a few. And I say us.
Right.
Very, very, you know, very honestly. But I do, yeah, I feel like that part of, you know, who he was, not knowing him personally.
Right, yeah.
But even just an answer like that is like, there's no reason to pander or to...
Mm-hmm.
Fake it.
Okay, I
because
get it.
That's what's happening in that brain. It's like, here's what I do. I play the piano, you know.
Yeah.
That's like this is what I do.
Everything I do.
And it has nothing. I'm not going to tell you something that isn't true about like why I'm in for doing this. I'm doing this because I'm doing it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. You know.
Because you know, there's the whole performer.
There's the whole
aspect.
Performing aspect, which is also really interesting because, I mean, I kind of mull this over a lot. People often assume that because you're a performer, you crave the limelight.
Yes.
Which is absolutely not true for many, many, many artists.
Right.
And appreciating an audience and craving the limelight are not the same thing necessarily.
No.
You know, and like needing validation and all that stuff. But I do... I sometimes take exception to that, you know, when, I mean, not in any kind of like aggressive way, but I feel like, no, that's not true. In fact, some of the greatest actors, you know, in the world don't want to engage with their fans.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, there's no like having that, like those accolades. Even as a young person, I remember being uncomfortable. I learned how to say, Thank you. And yeah. Thank you for coming.
It is a learning.
But that kind of like that where the public feels that familiarity mm-hmm. with you that you don't mm-hmm. feel. I mean, I would not be a performance isn't a performance without an audience. And I love how performances come alive when you have an audience. You know, it's very different from rehearsing. But for me, yeah, it was never about that. Even okay. though like I can be in the spotlight, but which is how I ended up falling into this choral music world, which is that okay. was kind of what we were talking about earlier, was when I moved to Chicago and had that first audition for the Clarks, I had left New York after years of being trained to be this opera singer up right. in front.
Right.
And I started doing auditions. Well, I had been doing auditions we were kind of groomed to audition when I was in graduate school in Boston. Mm-hmm. And it hit me maybe a little late that I was not a competitive person. I actually didn't want to beat anybody out.
Good luck
for
in that profession.
Exactly.
Good luck in that profession.
Crazy. Many, you know, kind of things came together, not necessarily always wonderful. I definitely, the death of my sister, upon like 2 months after I moved back to Chicago, kind of on this whim of like, I just want a different life from yeah. New York. And I just yeah. wanted to live by myself. And I just got an apartment. And then that happened. She was killed in a car accident. And but we grew up singing in the Chicago Children's Choir yeah. and singing together.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Well,
and
you
then
might
all
as well
of a sudden,
start at the top.
And
don't
then,
you?
yes, that little thing that I've been doing since, yeah. God knows. But anyway, yeah, just kind of discovering, to my great delight, when I was able to feel delight, that I could sing with other people mm-hmm. for money.
Mm-hmm.
I could sustain myself.
Mm-hmm.
Singing with other people, which was the thing that
imagine
I loved to do the
that.
Most.
Yeah. Let me, I need to pursue this. It is nowhere in the notes.
it's not in the notes. Darn it.
No. Maybe
oh,
if,
no.
No,
well,
hold it. Maybe
no,
if we
no, no.
turn
look
them
at,
over.
No. Yeah. Look at the first sentence.
But you're holding it backwards.
Singing with other people.
Singing.
See the connection?
Singing with other people by Dodie Whittaker. On sale now.
Lying.
It's not. Before we jump into
I'm
that,
not trying to lead the witness, but there is a sentence here that says,
"Let's
start
sing with
okay.
other people."
Right. Okay.
No, it doesn't say that at all.
Doesn't say that.
No,
okay.
We're going to take a. I gotta step away for a second because my notes are upside down, but I'll be right back. So you stay there too, will you? Okay, good. My name is Ed Hollihan, and my guest this morning is the inimitable. I love saying that. The inimitable.
That's a good word.
Dodie Whittaker.
All right. Thank and at the you. By the end of this, you will be singing with me. Just
oh, what a treat. Hey.
Hey.
Masters of the segue that they are. Here we are. And the reason I needed to step away there for a second is because I'm about to invite you into a we'll see how deep it gets. Let me preface this with my good friend Eric Gunderson, who is a brilliant yes.
I knew you would
like that name. Eric, as you may or may not know, dear audience, is a brilliant classical guitarist.
Brilliant.
Who was on the track. His teacher was the beyond brilliant Elliot Fisk. Who had every intention of turning Eric into the next Elliot Fisk.
Mm.
And at some point, when Eric realized it meant, 9 hours a day, ceaseless travel, no life, he said to Elliot, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be you. Of course, some people being some people took great offense at that and said goodbye. I mean, like, see ya.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Now, you hit a point where you said, I don't want to be.
So first of all, the part of that, so I know parts of that story.
Yeah.
Eric, so I found out about this kid, Eric. I'm a kid, whatever. Sorry,
he
Eric.
Is a kid.
Well, when I went and met him, he was pretty young. He still is. But anyway, somebody was like, there's this classical guitarist in town. And I was like, what? And immediately I thought, Kathleen Battle, Christopher Parkening.
Nice. Nice place to go.
And I think there were several times in there where I was like, hey, like we met, you know, mm-hmm. and of course. And, but I, and he hadn't moved away yet, but I know that there was that kind of like, yeah, I do this, but this is not a thing that I do, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was probably pretty fresh. But we, but what we discovered was, is that we, that moment was actually way closer to home because we went to the same school.
Yeah, how about it? How about it?
Yeah. Not to say anything bad about that school.
No.
Necessarily, although no. I could. But no, we went to the same music conservatory. And I keep thinking of this movie Whiplash. You know
sure.
this movie Whiplash?
I do.
Which I just noticed just came up on, it's, you can watch it on Netflix. But it's kind of this brilliant and also like very, very traumatic. Like it's a painful story to watch mm-hmm. About a fictional music conservatory and this kind of, I don't even want to call it tough love. I don't know what you call that, but this very yeah. specific kind of way relationship between a teacher and a student and how a certain, you know, camp, you know, a certain philosophy of teaching in particular in music and dance and some other, you know, where it's literally like you kind of have to punish your body and mm-hmm. your psyche. I mean, or it's being, you know, like there's, it's abuse.
Yeah, it
and,
is.
And I think, and as much, yeah, so this particular movie it's a drummer, and so you can see that, right? You can see that, like, literally that visceral, you know, you see the blood mm-hmm. on this guy's hands as mm-hmm. he's working and being abused. But that, and I'm not saying that that's what happened to either me or Eric, but that is the environment mm-hmm. in which that is normalized. And so watching that movie really, you know, it'll trigger stuff for you as a classical musician. I think everybody has probably had some experience yeah. where it's their intention is to kind of beat this excellence out of you mm-hmm. or into you
into
or whatever
you. Yeah,
you
however
know
that works
yeah and yeah so I mean, there's so many. I think even just going out into the world, then after making whatever that decision is, of like, I'm not going to do this. And I know people that have completely stopped.
Right.
I did not stop.
Right.
So just to be clear, I just found another path.
You changed the context.
I had another yeah. path, which I'm so fortunate. I wish I had known that was open to me. Although I absolutely treasure all the experiences that I had at yeah. being trained as a soloist and all of that stuff. But yeah, so that the psychological and even, I mean, we still live with it, right? Like I'm in my 50s and I still have this kind of guilt of like, oh, I'm not practicing enough or, oh, I should be up
Do
there
really?
Doing it. Oh yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you really?
Because of all of that training.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of that, like, and I am still doing it, but I mean, you know, even the opportunities, because I did have, I've had experiences kind of like that where a teacher or a mentor or somebody, a conductor that I happened to work with was like, you could be the next whatever, uh-huh. Uh-huh. but you're going to have to do this and this and this and this and this. And I'd always go back to, but I, you know, I have a house and I have kids or I have a life or I have, yeah. you know, there were always those things, but also I think fundamentally, like, what kind of a person are you? You know, is that, and there's nothing wrong with being single-minded mm-hmm. about those things. I have friends who have incredible careers mm-hmm. because either they were wired that way.
There's a whole.
Right? Like, I feel like that's so much of it is, right? It's
Absolutely.
Not even, you don't even think about
no
it.
No question.
Yep. And I think that's what happened to me when I was, you know, pounding the pavement in New York City, like, wait a minute, these people want it way more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. okay. I can accept that. Like, I knew what I wanted. I wanted to live by myself.
Yeah.
And have a just quiet and a quality of life that I could not have had if I had kept doing that, you know? And then years later, you know, I can't even imagine if I, you know, I love being at home. I love my kids. I love mm-hmm. all those things. And I was very fortunate because I still sang for a living.
That was my thought, and I was going to keep it to myself, but you said it first. You've been incredibly fortunate to have, do I say, your cake and eating it too? Something like that. But the choice you made has fit completely
it's with fortune
the life
and,
you want.
And hard work.
A lot of work.
Yes, a lot of work.
Let's talk about wiring for a minute. It's one of my favorite subjects.
Is it?
Oh, it is. Truly.
Yeah.
Truly.
I want to pick your brain about wiring.
I work from time to time with the seniors at Youth Initiative. And part of their curriculum is nature nurture. Mm. You know, the forever discussion about, well, okay, what makes a life? Of course, both of them do. But it's fun to argue, not argue. Absolutely. It's fun to discuss which is primary, okay? All my life, I've been a...
God, I was missing some fun classes, apparently, when I was there. Like, well, I would have much rather done that.
We'll invite you this year, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Sean, LaVoy, are you listening?
Talk about pulling teeth. God. No, just kidding. I love the kiddos.
You come into the world, I'm not going to do the five personality, blah, 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 blah.
Ooh, I want to do that.
But there are,
All right.
In a whole other show. Are you keeping score? I think that's the 13th of the show.
I hope somebody
we're
going to
do.
They didn't give me a pen, so I can't make notes.
That's why I'm the boss of this.
I'm not
allowed
to touch my phone.
I have the. If you want to borrow my pen, you can.
I won't remember a single
thing. The trick, it seems to me, in a life is, first of all, to understand your wiring. And then it's a question, because I really don't think you can change it. I know there's a whole school of neuroscience right now that says, of course you can. I say, no, you can't. So taking it from my point of view, you come into the world, and if you're wired shy, so be it.
Mm.
What do you do with it?
Mm.
If you're wired extrovert, so be it. What do you do with it? The question is always, to me, in a life.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the sitch. What do I do?
You're born in a privilege? What do
what
you do?
What do you do? Boy, is there a good example.
I mean...
Listen, if you're born in trouble, if your childhood absolutely sucks, what do you do with it? It's what we have.
It's what we have, and understanding that you have choices.
Yeah, you do.
That your fate is not
plenty of times you feel like you don't, especially if you're wired certain, you know, poor me.
And also, if you have privilege and you recognize that you have privilege to actually lift yourself up out of whatever that is. You know, everybody has that ability, but we don't all, well, we're certainly not all conscious that we have that ability to actually make a choice.
Well, that's part
every
of
day.
Part of that is called education.
Well, I was going to say, I am not only a high school teacher, but a mother of humans who have made it into adulthood-ish.
Right.
And absolutely, like, you have a choice. That is, I wish that... I kind of wish that had been communicated to me a little bit more.
Don't you, though?
I mean, I'm sure that it was in a lot of ways, but I feel like even just those words of, like, and depending on how you're wired, this is hard, but you actually can step back from whatever that situation is and think, which path can I go down now? Like,
That can be extremely
difficult.
What's
the smart choice?
Yes. Yeah.
And yes, I mean, well, yeah, my mother, Judy, who's 84 and lives in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and may be listening to this at some point.
Oh, you will. I'll call you Judy, okay? Judy. I'll give you a heads up. Hi, Judy.
Is a child and family therapist and, works with kind of littles for the most part. And I'm sure that was communicated to us in a certain way,
Sure.
but maybe more by example in a way, you know. I mean, she certainly had, she was born into privilege and had choices. And made some very, you know, very conscious ones about how she wanted to live her life and who she wanted to marry and all of those things. Very strong-willed person, and which, you know, I feel fortunate to have inherited that. Nature, nurture, who knows?
Right.
But I do feel like that as it kind of in my own adult life and my own, you know, when I, because of the things that have happened, you know, over the years, which I did experience kind of an inordinate amount of grief at a young age, younger age, especially for like a middle class, you know, I mean, it's, you grow up in a war zone, it's totally different. You see death every day. That is not how I grew up. And although there were some, my mother actually lost quite a few friends to, one to suicide, and speaking of musical geniuses, her friend Ivy Beard was he was absolutely one of those people, like an organ prodigy, and tortured genius. So some other things like that. But then, in my early to mid 20s, just things happened that are not supposed to happen.
Right.
So I think whether it was conscious or not, I was very fortunate to be able to understand that I had a choice. How do you come out of that? How do you come through those things? And I think I already kind of had a resilience built into me from other, you know, for whatever reason. But, and also I do believe, as much as, you know, I don't know exactly what I believe about where people go when they die and all of that stuff, but when somebody is so important to you in your life, so I'm talking about my sister now, Rachel. She was my best friend and just my partner in crime and my singing partner and all of those things, and you carry that with you. That's not gone when somebody leaves.
No,
right? Like that's there, and for, you know, we were already steeped in this, like, music saved our lives, you know, time and time and time again, right? Like, as a, you know, weird kid who never fit into the box.
It's not easy being weird.
It is not easy being weird. Is that how the song goes?
Easy being green.
It can, yes. You know,
Kermit
I actually already wrote a parody of that called It's Not Easy Being Steve, but that's a whole nother thing. There's so many Steves.
I can't wait. Whole other show.
Okay. Whole other show. But yeah, so I, being able to, the fact that that literally, like, I had to sing. That had to be my job. Because I couldn't do anything else to survive. It was the music and the, and all the opportunities that I had, and I can, you know, catalog those. But I feel like it was the people. Like, that's what I needed, right? Like, that's what you need. And so I think if you're, and again, you can have a very successful solo career, you know, all of that, and that can be an incredible thing. I've seen people do that. But for me, it was about, like, who's on my right and who's on my left?
Yeah.
Like, what voices am I hearing? And I'm music of the Baroque. I mean, I can tell you that that was my other kind of just saved me. I mean, Clark's was pretty cool because I met so many cool people and I did so many cool things. But music of the Baroque, and this may be a metaphor for something, you can probably figure it out because you're the brains in this.
That says
brains.
A lot about
this. I'm the brawn. I don't know. I'm the something. But so Tom Wickman, who founded Music of the Baroque, which is incredible, you know, you could probably expound upon that, but a choir and orchestra made up of some of the greatest musicians in the city, who sang in all the other groups, you know, and played in all the other groups. But the first thing that you would do, and I could, a whole nother show would be just the audition process for getting into Music of the Rogues. I'm not going to do that. But Tom was very exacting. Let's just say that.
That's
one of those
nice
brains.
Word.
I would say maybe like a Glenn Gould type of, like, just single, like, here's how it's supposed to sound, and here's da-da-da. And he would constantly change the key depending on what he heard. We'd be in these cathedrals rehearsing, getting ready for, and we'd be doing some, this isn't Renaissance music where we didn't have accompaniment.
Right.
And he would say, okay, try it. And we'd have to shift to half, you know, a half step up.
Didn't ask for much, did he?
Hear, not a lot, not a lot. I mean, thank God I don't have perfect pitch. That's a whole other thing. People out there do not, perfect pitch is not a thing that you want. It's not a thing that you want. It's nothing. It's like a thing you're born with. It doesn't help you with anything. But especially in a group like that. But the other thing is that we sang in quartets. And if anybody doesn't understand what that is, so in a choir, you got the soprano section, the alto section, all that. We'll have to explain what all that is too.
Well,
some people don't know.
It's a whole lot.
Again, I've been singing choral music professionally since I was like 9. But singing in quartets means that you're not standing next to any person who's in your section. So you're and so he would place us very deliberately. And again, this audition process kind of...
place you very deliberately where?
Next to somebody who was not your singing part.
Gotcha.
So I had a tenor on one side and a baritone on the other
gotcha.
Side.
Gotcha.
And there are so many benefits to being... If you are able to do that, right? Like if you're singing in a... Most choirs, there's strong singers and, you know,
yeah,
novices,
sure.
or like there's
yeah.
leaders and followers and stuff. So, I got to hear my part next to me. But if you're, this is a different level, right? But any choir, I would suggest, we do that in rich tones sometimes. Mm-hmm. We say, okay, we're gonna move it around a little bit because what you're hearing, the tuning, it's the tuning.
Yeah.
Because you,
it's a
like,
good word.
Oh, there's this bass next to me, and he's like the foundation of this chord. And so I know what to tune to. But also just the timbre. So he put me in, and this was trial by fire, by the way. This was not only that, but it was like probationary. It's probationary.
Gotcha.
You don't actually sing with music. This is back in the day. You don't actually singing with us. You come to the rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, this is what he told me. He said, somebody is going to miss one concert. So you're going to be the sub for that one performance. But you have to come to all the rehearsals and you have to learn all the music, of course. And then eventually, I mean, he let me sing in all of them. I mean, whatever. But it was so much like that. Like, and then to be dropped in between these incredible singers, this tenor
yeah.
and this bass. I can't even tell you. It was like that was a transform, unbelievably. Like, oh, this is
wow.
what I'm supposed to be doing.
Wow,
incredible! Like beyond all the experiences I've had, I've had incredible experiences in choirs, but that was absolutely transformative in terms of just that, like feeling, like being in this realm of just pure, like. Sound
yeah.
and timbre and harmony, you know, and then we can make lots of cliche, you know, like references about blending,
but
singing
I'm,
together in community. With
I'm
your,
thinking,
but I mean,
with a big smile on my face, all
Stuff
the ingredients that you've had in your life. And I'm talking music now, specifically. You're a lucky girl. A lot of folks are tracked, and they like it that way. And
that's
if you
can
see the face that just went me.
No, and again, yeah, I'm one of those. You know, I was born in the '60s. I went to school in the late '60s. But I went to school at a time where it would never occur to people that my behavioral problems had anything to do with neurodivergence. I mean, that wasn't even a word. But I'm straight up ADHD, female. And if your diagnosis is an adult with ADHD, it means that you have had it since you were a child. There's no such thing as like adult ADHD,
late onset.
That's not a thing. And looking back, of course, that is one of the things that both sustained me and also was just the biggest thorn in my side in terms of how people respond to you. But also, yes, I found the thing, the hyper-focused thing. And the other thing, I'll just say this about Music of the Rogue, is that the very first rehearsal, sectional rehearsal that you go to, mm-hmm. so which means you're just meeting with your fellow sopranos, we would sight read, sometimes a cappella, Bach.
Nice.
Like, or whatever, Handel, like in German.
Mm-hmm.
Just, okay, let's go. And I had experiences like that actually in the children's choir where we were put on the spot. We used to go to choir camp in the fall and it was intense. You'd rehearse like four or five times a
there's
day.
There's a thought to those of us who spent the summer playing baseball. Choir camp.
Yeah,
choir camp. Hey, speaking of late onset.
Yes, late onset.
When we come back,
okay,
which will be momentarily, it's late in this conversation to start talking about the Ridgetones and what they're up to. And we're going to do that.
We are totally going to do
that. In just a cat's whiskers flash of time.
I love that.
Ed Hollihan here, hosting Dodie Whitaker.
Dodie Whitaker here.
Dodie Whitaker there. Hey, you're there. I'm here. We're all in this together.
Oh, my gosh. It's I wrote great. A song that literally has some of the, one of the lines is, I'm here, you're there. You seem so far. It was my post-COVID. It was my COVID song that I wrote.
Oh.
You seem so far away, my friend, but our hearts will share until we meet again. It's a song about I will see you someday.
It's got a little Sondheim in
it. It's actually way more perky than that. But
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we do it,
and I'm not a lyric person, so yeah, I'll sing it for you.
Speaking of lyric people, how about those Ridgetones?
Wow, huh? I thought you were going to segue into lyric opera, but the Ridgetones is even better.
And how about those Ridgetones?
Those Ridgetones are pretty awesome. My career with the lyric opera and all of those other Chicago Symphony really was just the gateway. It really was just exactly
a prelude to the Ridgetones,
the height of Baroque. No, and this is serious. I actually went to the two things that I say really clinched it for me for moving here.
Okay.
Was that I happened to be here during the weekend of the spring of the Ridgetones concert.
No kidding.
And, well, apparently I was coming up here a lot because I also remember going to the Pleasant Ridge spring concert. And both of those things were like, oh.
Wow.
I could actually do this.
In a town this size?
Yeah.
These people are doing...
Well, and can I give a shout out to Rob
Overston? Would you?
Can I?
Yeah.
And Paul Berquist. I went to this concert and I saw there was this barbershop quartet. And
yes.
I literally was blown... I was like...
They were darn good.
They were so good. And Rob, with this countertenor...
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
Absolutely
I literally
critical.
Was like, how is that a thing? And I love barbershop and I sing. Now I sing
Don't you, though?
With, I mean, we do what's called mixed barbershop, which simply means
is
there's
that even
a woman
legal?
Involved.
Is that even legal,
yeah,
Dodie?
Apparently.
Can you do that?
Do you know it wasn't? Do
you,
know,
want
that,
to sing
do you know that
Rose?
It was not
Let's
legal?
Sing Lighter Rose
do you know
from
that
it
was not legal when my parents were married? Was not legal.
I think I
in this country
know where you're going
for them to be married.
Yeah,
in the state
tell,
that
tell
they
the
were.
Tell the folks why.
Say,
so there's
what was
this different
giant
about
word. There's this giant word, miscegenation. I still can't even pronounce that
it's
stupid,
a stupid
word.
Word.
It's such a dumb word. But the mixing of the races.
Yeah,
race also kind of a.
Yeah.
You know, a topic that
okay.
we could take
okay,
a
that's three more shows.
But
that's,
yeah, that was three.
Got it. We're
but
up
you know,
to
but
18.
It all leads to Dodie Whitaker, right? Like, here I am.
Absolutely.
I would not be
Amen,
here
sister.
Had it not
are
been
Are we going
for...
to save time for me to ask you, when are you going to get wrinkles?
Oh.
Because you got no wrinkles.
I don't.
How can you have no wrinkles? Everybody's got wrinkles. All God's children got
When I get to wrinkles. Yeah, no. Apparently, let's see. I'm trying to come up with a good word
Will
for
you
it.
Give me a heads up?
Jaffro. I call it, okay, I call my hair a jaffro. You know, people say, do you
I like it, I like it, I like it.
But I don't know, what's the word for bluish? There we go. Bluish don't crack.
Oh man, I'm stopping the show right now because I have found the words for what's left of my life. And it goes something like, bluish, don't crack. Bluish, don't crack.
Bluish, that's my next song. Don't crack. That's a beat.
Thank you, Dodie.
Are we done? Is that how we're leaving?
I think my entire career is done because now I have.
And actually, I'm sure that's absolutely.
I've been looking for a
I don't know if it's the
meditation
Jewish
theme.
But both my parents.
Bluish, don't crack. Hey, how about them Ridgestones?
How about the Ridgestones?
Got a show coming up.
Absolutely. We have a show coming up. We are doing our annual holiday concert in which there may be some songs that actually are that we connect to a holiday.
There could be.
It's definitely not a Christmas concert. It's our holiday concert because it's around the holidays.
It's that time of year.
But no, we actually are. We actually have programmed some songs in that relate to the Christmas holiday.
Are you going to get to direct a couple?
We used to carol. Yes. So this is very exciting. I asked if I could conduct the opening number, which is from the Messiah. So there's something.
The Christmas section, no doubt.
Exactly. I know. Don't even.
I know just why you rolled your eyes. That's hilarious.
How many times have you
do not play that chorus.
No, do not. No, I love the Christmas section. Is everybody aware that there are other parts of the Messiah? But anyway, yes. So I will be conducting the orchestra for the first time, which I'm really excited about. It's not the first time I've conducted an orchestra. But
how many pieces are we putting together this time? Do we even know yet?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Okay. Yes, you of course we know. A dozen plus solos and things like that.
A lot of our favorite suspects.
But no, I'm excited about that because I know we're doing For Unto Us a Child Is Born, and I know that piece so well. Mm-hmm. And so here's an interesting tidbit that you, I'm sure, are aware of, but I'm not sure if everybody. So there's something called the Do-It-Yourself Messiah.
Oh yes.
Which we've never done here. It might be fun to do at some point. We've talked about it.
You wanna?
Yeah.
I can't do anything about the singing part, but I can sure help you promote it.
But the thing is that's what it is, right? Yeah. It's a sing-along. Right. So there was a tradition when I was growing up that it would happen at Orchestra Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And in Chicago, which is now Symphony Center,
It is.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was there when all that was being built up.
Do it yourself, Messiah,
where the audience is the chorus, and they pass out. The audience passes out because they have to sing the Hallelujah chorus, and it's big. There's books of music. There's giant books of music, and they pass them out and you sing, and then the soloists are up on the stage and they do that in the orchestra, but the whole room sings the choruses. And so I think I was singing that particular
sweet
song probably earlier than many
sweet
in my life.
You know, well, it occurs
so it's
to
gonna
be
really fun to conduct, and thank you, Paul, for letting me do that.
If we did do,
yes.
We being Viroqua, Vernon County, whoever, a do-it-yourself, you folks, well, 25 or 35 of you would obviously be the seeds of that, and the rest of us shy types could just sing with you in this giant do-it-yourself
absolutely
Messiah, and that's a really, I'm serious, that's a really good idea.
We could do that.
In a place like this and that supports what it supports.
Yes. So the other fun thing about that, and now I'm thinking of, in particular, you know, some of these young singers who, you know, it'd be really fun to say, okay, you learn this or you learn that, is that you can have as many or as few soloists as you want. It's
sure.
not like
sure.
a perfect, you know, like, oh, I'm up there, I'm the soprano, and I can tell you stories. About
I bet you
breastfeeding,
could.
like about being could. Dehydrated from breastfeeding my first child and trying to sing Rejoice after, you know, sitting for half an hour. That was the first and last Messiah I ever did with that particular group. But anyway, I've done do-it-yourself B minor mass. That's a really fun one. But so there are lots of solos, but anybody who wants to do them is not quite the same. Although it's really fun. But anyway, yeah, so that would be a really wonderful opportunity to showcase other singers who want to do solos. And then, safety in numbers, I always say.
Absolutely.
You're sitting in a group of...
someplace to hide.
50 people and everybody's... Yeah, and you can lip sync.
So were you telling
nobody's
me...
Nobody's going to judge
the
you.
The do-it-yourself lip sync. It's a whole
okay,
new...
Okay, why is nobody
we could
actually
get thousands
phonating?
Of people. December 14th,
that'd be so
am
cool.
I right?
December 14th. I will also be conducting the women's ensemble, and we're doing a Sweet Honey in the Rock song, which is, always an honor. And if you don't know who Sweet Honey in the Rock, there's some people in the choir that
there,
don't. I'm
there
like,
are
look
people
these
who don't,
people
okay?
up. But yeah, this was... this is going to be, I think,
great.
Dare I say, a great concert.
It's at Good Shepherd, yes.
Good Shepherd, 7:30, December 14th.
No.
Preview.
What street is Good Shepherd on?
At Rock?
Yeah.
It's between Main Street yeah. and Rock Street.
It's Oak,
yes.
Between Main and Rock.
Okay. Oh, and is that wait? What?
Oak is the east-west street.
Oh, right, yeah. right. We don't need to know that.
I live around the corner from there.
Yeah. South. Between South and Oak.
Yeah, it's in the 600 block of South Main. You'll find it.
You can't miss
You'll
it.
You'll find it.
You
it's
can't.
Big. It's beautiful.
Big. Park in the back.
There's crazy numbers of happy people walking in around about, 7:30, we figure?
Around 7:30. You can buy tickets at the DOA.
Be there or be square,
be
my
there
friends.
Be there or be square.
It's the holiday concert.
And we also have really good treats during intermission.
Yay.
All home-baked.
Dodie Whittaker.
Yes.
We are being told we have exactly 60 seconds left. It has been such a treat talking to you today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. No, we've
You're
scheduled
welcome.
16 more shows.
Yes. Can, we,
you're, would
see
you
in, see you in a week.
Have your
yes.
people call my people
I will,
and we'll set up
I
a regular
do that.
Schedule.
I will do that. Okay. My rates have gone up. Just
Mine have gone down,
so
I think
know.
We can afford it. Hey, seriously.
But no, I
thank
actually
you.
Love the idea that so we much. That we cooked up for, well, we were talking this off the record, but.
Yeah.
Just to be, yeah. stay tuned and how you
stay
can support
tuned.
The Ridgetones.
There you go.
Because we're awesome.
And on that note, thank you so much, dear heart, for tuning in today. It's been fun. Dodie, let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it again. Thank you for having me. You're
welcome.
Pretty awesome.